Hey everyone, welcome back to the 443 Security Simplified. I'm your host, Mark the Liberty, and joining me today is...
Rare Incoherency, or at least that's the anagram for my name, Corey Nachran.
Is that real?
Yeah.
Oh, I had no idea.
I'm smart. I certainly didn't use a tool 2 minutes before the podcast to look it up.
You know what, actually that makes a whole lot of sense too.
Rare Incoherency? I mean, come on! It couldn't have been better! I had hundreds of options, and I picked that one for you, the best words.
Well done, sir. In today's episode, we cover some research that ended up basically breaking parts of the internet, and then jump into our main section on how to breach a company. Let's go ahead and jump in with the news. Yesterday? Well, yesterday as we're recording this, a email chain came out based off some research that some researchers at several universities, I think it was like MIT, Hebrew University in Jerusalem, and then a German university that I'm not going to try and pronounce. They were playing around with BGP in order to evaluate...
BGP, Mark, what is that?
Oh, man. BGP, Border Gateway Protocol.
Yeah, which, I shouldn't have done it. We've talked about it before, right?
If you remember our predictions from 2019, we predicted some... potential issues with attackers taking down the internet because of flaws in BGP and inherent weaknesses because it's basically a protocol older than time itself.
It's a good protocol. They just didn't think much about bad guys taking advantage of it with no security controls.
Yep. And
or
there are
few security controls.
And there are security controls in the works. They're just not taking off quick enough. So this research actually came about from trying to evaluate different options for speeding up these new security features for BGP. They ran their first test on January 8th, where they were advertising out a prefix, so a set of routes to different BGP hosts on the internet, where they had this custom attribute, which BGP, when you advertise out prefixes, you can include attributes that tell routers to do certain things with it, basically. And in this attribute, they had certain flags. One of the flags is something called Operation Transitive, which means include this attribute with all of your advertisements for this prefix to every other router you send it.
And just for the people that don't know, depending on different, I mean, BGP is one protocol, but a flag is just when someone makes a protocol standard, they have many different options that you can set in various places in the packet. So a flag is a specific setting somewhere in the packet that does something according to the protocol standard, the
exactly.
one you just named.
It tells the recipient to do something with it. In this case, to keep sending the attribute on as it forwards on the prefix. They also had another flag set that's a special flag reserved for development is the only standard around it, and that devices should support it, but shouldn't really do anything at all.
So a generic flag that doesn't do anything but is part of the standard. That sounds fun.
Exactly. As it turns out, even though the attribute that they advertised was compliant with the BGP spec, these were valid flags, it caused some issues on some routers on the internet. Routers that relied on this one open source routing software called FRR actually had a bug where when they tried to parse and receive this advertisement with this special attribute, they would start flapping, as it's called, which is where they switch back and forth between which route is the best route for any given prefix in this case. And that causes all sorts of problems through the chain of the internet, basically, with route advertisements, where if one router says, oh, the best way to get to this network is here. Actually, no, it's here. Oh, wait, it's here. Each of those is a route update it sends. Every other router has to update its tables. And this caused this compounding issue with performance problems and routes getting dropped that caused some apparently very significant issues on the internet for the 10 minutes they were doing
this. So essentially these researchers accidentally created a fast flux network kind of like botnets, but an unintentional routing fast flux network that DDoSed or DOSed these routers.
Exactly. So their first test was January 8th. The maintainers of this routing software identified the bug pretty quickly, put out a patch pretty quickly, and then they ran another test on the 23rd, which, I mean, it turns out it takes people some time to update their routing software.
Oh, no.
And it caused the exact same issue
all over again.
Oh,
it must have fixed it. Everyone downloads firmware immediately, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I was following this mailing list of people basically complaining about this, and it was an interesting fight of... Half of the folks replying were saying, what are you doing? Do this in a sandbox. You're bringing down the internet. And the other half were saying, well, I mean, they're following all the standards. I mean, should they be in trouble for sending a compliant advertisement out to BGP networks?
And to some
networks?
Extent, they're trying to test whether or not some of the security features work, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, my first question is, like, everyone's trying to play the blame game with causing disruptions in the internet here. Is it the tester, the researcher's fault for doing this test? Is it the software owner's or maintainer's fault for having this bug in there? Is it the owners of the actual router's fault for not updating their routers quick enough?
I could go both ways with this, right? I mean, from one point of view, their motive was obviously not malicious. No. And, you know, it seems like they went through these tests in the public way. On the other hand, I think most IT guys know that you don't test against production servers that are in a real environment that needs uptime. Like, if they were doing this test, if they had like a little network of 100 routers of their own in a closed environment that were all speaking BGP and they were doing that, obviously no problem. But to do something like this against the internet, it's like, same question comes up when you scan the internet. Some people have known for scanning the internet, and in the same ways, different scans that have different flags can cause chaos on the real internet, even though your intention was just to do a scan. You're scanning everyone's network when you do that. So maybe best practice says don't do it against other people's production stuff. On the flip side, how else are we going to test it in the real world?
Yeah, and so they noted that they did preliminary tests in their own little sandbox where they used some pretty popular routers to test against, and they didn't see any issues with it, which is why they went ahead with this public test.
And it makes sense. I mean, when we have these little sandboxes, we have a perfect kind of ivory tower environment. The internet and how people set up their own routers is not that perfect ivory tower. People mess up. So at some point, you kind of have to. I mean, when we release software, we tested against everything we can think of, but real environments are infinite. So eventually things happen when you put it in the real world. So I can see both sides. I mean, I don't think it's that bad an issue that they did this. At the very least, everyone knows about it, right?
Yeah. And I guess I do understand the frustration that some people had of running the second test so quickly after the first one.
Yeah.
Like 2 weeks is... I mean,
no, that was probably the big thing. Like, if they're not telling everyone to update, hey, yes, they fixed it, but people do not. If you didn't get the sarcastic joke me and Mark made, as a company that releases hardware that has firmware, our own customers don't upgrade to the latest and greatest very quickly, even when we recommend it sometimes. So people can be years behind on hardware firmware upgrades. So to think it's just fixed because there's a patch is in 2 weeks is not realistic.
And I'm actually arguing with myself in my head right now as we're discussing this, where, I mean, on one hand, some of these routers on the internet are critical infrastructure and they should be updated immediately, like teams that are like monitoring.
Why weren't they updated in two weeks is the question you ask.
But at the same time, I imagine some of the folks impacted were ones that are on networks, like just large organizations that might have a BGP autonomous system that they can connect with their ISP with, for example. Yeah. And in those cases, 2 weeks might not be enough.
Yeah.
And they still would be affected by this because of that one flag that said propagate this to every single router you advertise to. So, by the way, it's a mixed can.
Speaking of, you know, we mentioned the predictions. One of your predictions was a hacker can hold the internet hostage. And really, we mentioned two protocols, one being DNS, but really the one we wanted to focus on and the one that, frankly, it's surprising it hasn't been hacked more is BGP. Mm-hmm. So this obviously doesn't mean the prediction's true because hacker hasn't held the internet hostage yet. But this is a perfect example of what you were trying to show about some of the issues in this protocol that is literally critical for the internet to work.
And the real irony was they were testing ways to improve BGP with this experiment. And
maybe
it just happened to break it.
Our prediction would be humanity would actually accidentally DDoS the internet.
Yeah. So I thought this was a fun story. And I guess our main takeaway is just keep your software updated because they were able to patch it pretty quick. It's just a matter of installing those updates on your routers before they do another test, I suppose.
Well, I would say if there's good-minded security researchers and people out there, even though we're ultimately not saying these guys were doing a horrible thing, you really have to think through the implications of doing any test that's on the live internet. You know, it's not because we don't want security researchers and people to find flaws. Me and Mark actually believe in full but responsible disclosure. but you know, you kind of got to think about some of these and maybe coordinate these tests with other organizations so that they can help recover if anything goes bad.
Yep, I agree entirely. And we'll see. I think they canceled all their experiments indefinitely for now, somewhat understandably. But I'm sure someone will find a way to see if those routers have been patched sometime soon.
Conspiracy theory too, by the way. I wonder if hackers watch the same, you know, forums and news groups as you, because now they might get ideas.
I'm sure they do. And maybe my prediction will come true. And I guess after the break now, we will jump into our main section where we have a fun one today, as opposed to the rather sad one from last week. We're going to walk you through how to breach a company.
Yeah, all the ways you can get hacked. So fun.
So for our main section today, we wanted to try and make it a little interesting, but also less doom and gloom. Like we had, I mean, the government is still shut down. So if you haven't checked out last week's episode and you want a sad one, check it out.
By the way, I'm still questioning your less doom and gloom as soon as they hear the subject.
This is a fun one.
For us, because we like knowing how to pen test networks.
We're going to walk through the six different buckets that an organization called the Breach Level Index uses for tracking data breaches. So really, these six different ways to breach a company.
And I think also generic ways that I think Breach Level Index gets a lot of their data from public aggregated database leaks. So it's kind of generic categories for types of data breaches.
Yep. So they've got six different buckets. We're going to walk through each of them, try and explain what exactly it covers, and then give a few actual examples of breaches that have fallen into them, preferably more recent ones. And so I guess we can start with the first one, which is accidental loss as a bucket. Yep. And really, this covers a few different things. It could be, say, like me leaving my laptop behind on a train, for example.
At one point, by the way, this was probably one of the most common buckets. That's changed a little. But accidental loss is essentially mistakes employees can make that lose data. Okay. I mean, you mentioned a laptop, but it could also be throwing away confidential documents in a dumpster without shredding them.
Yep. A really big issue that really hit the limelight last year and really the year before was open Amazon S3 buckets. So storage locations in the cloud with where people did not add proper access restrictions and anyone could go get them.
And it doesn't have to be an S3. There could be just mistakes in your own internal database, like, I don't know, using an SA, the database equivalent of root password on your web application that lets everybody, you know, and having a SQL injection that lets everybody grab stuff.
And while that can kind of tie into the next one that we'll cover where like external hackers come in, oftentimes these accidental loss ones are discovered just by researchers that are combing across the internet.
Well, here's another real one. I mean, I think you're going to go into some examples, but another one is, I call it Outlook tab autocomplete. I've had a coworker in the past who was sending Excel sheets full of databases, and let's say he wanted to send it at Mike whatever, and he emails Mike all the time, so he types MI and presses tab, and next thing you know, he just sent an email to Michelle at some other company that has sensitive data in it. Perfect example of an accidental data leak, one that happens many times. By the way, I've screwed up autocomplete myself. I have a friend whose husband's first name is close to her first name, and I send him this emails all the time. Luckily, no sensitive data, no data leaks there. But he's like, why are you sending me stuff? You work with my wife.
It's like accidentally texting your parents or your boss.
Yeah.
Those autocomplete mistakes. There were some pretty prominent examples recently, though. It was just last year or the year before, I think, where DeepRoot Analytics managed a database for the Republican National Committee, where they had over 200 million records of information on American voters that was left open in an Amazon S3 bucket without any access restrictions. And a
pretty
researcher
scary.
Found this pretty quickly.
On the flip side, by the way, a lot of people don't know a lot of our public voting records are public.
Yeah.
There are places you can get them.
And that's just one example. I could name like five or six different ones that I remember from earlier last year where it was the same exact thing, open Amazon S3 buckets, which to Amazon's credit, they changed their defaults now where you are prompted quite heavily to add access restrictions to them. So in terms of protection tips on this one, I had a few. When it comes to like losing a laptop, having solutions that have encryption at rest, like full hard drive encryption, is luckily becoming the norm now.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there's still organizations that haven't implemented that yet.
And there's tools, whether it's laptops or mobiles, like they call it MDM or mobile device management, where one of the features is if an employee says it's stolen, you can press a button in central management and just wipe it.
Yep.
As you mentioned, it's encrypted before you wipe it. So even while it's in the hacker's hands, they can't get their access to it.
And then when it comes to keeping your data safe and not accidentally publishing it all on the internet, just good due diligence of A, access control restrictions, especially if it's up in the cloud, and then B, triple and quadruple checking access to your critical databases and
Absolutely.
Making sure you didn't accidentally like port forward something into it.
So some of these, like when I mentioned tab autocomplete, you know, you can't avoid user mistakes other than by training them. If you're handling something that sensitive, you got to be very careful, double check this or that before you send it. So some is purely just helping your employees learn how to handle data in a better way.
By the way, this advice coming from Corey King, grammatical mistake in emails.
Hey, I'm a public writer, and you'll notice that is very clean writing. You're not worth the edit. When I send an email to you, I'm like, screw the editing. He can figure it out.
You're not worth an edit, sir.
Those be fighting words.
Let's move on to our next bucket. And this one's one that really, I think, is their leading bucket right now in terms of volume, which is malicious outsiders. And this is external hackers. What Yep. people typically think of these days when they think of a data breach, someone came in and stole it.
Yeah, and we'll be talking about, like, there used to be a big controversy whether external hackers are really a big deal or is it more accidental loss, and some other subjects we'll bring up. But as you mentioned, this is clearly the leader in the past 4 or 5 years.
And there's a few different things that fall under this. Usually, though, it is some outside attacker exploiting a flaw either in your software or your data security practices in order to steal information.
Yep.
And there's technical versions of this. A really common one is like a SQL injection attack,
yeah.
where if you don't properly sanitize input on a web application and you have a database backend, someone might be able to interface with that database in ways that you didn't want them.
That's probably one of the most common, just because, I mean, by definition, there's a database behind web servers. So databases where all the information is.
Where all the information
are.
Oh, information.
Yeah. I have the best words.
The best words. Stable genius. Also, application vulnerabilities. So just exploiting the web server itself, for example. Which
if it suffers from some flaw, yeah. like IIS, you mean, or Apache
yeah.
or whatnot.
Where if you can get access to that server, you can often reposition and hit other servers behind there, such as their actual database
server. But to be honest, the sky's the limit for this. I mean,
yeah.
run-of-the-mill malware is going to steal your CD keys. It's going to look for files. It might look for your crypto. I mean, a simple malware infection can turn into malicious outsider data loss.
And I'd even include physical attacks in this, too. There was a Mr. Robot episode that was actually a pretty good run-through of this, where they went into E-Corp.
What do you mean, Mr. Robot episode, that was pretty good. They're all pretty good.
When it comes to physical attacks,
okay,
going in and stealing data directly out of a company by social engineering your way in.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, that one was social engineering, if I'm thinking the right one, and technical, because to get
yep.
to one of the systems that had important data, specifically certificates, they had to crack HSM, which is a pretty sophisticated high-end crack.
Yeah.
Cool episode if you haven't seen it.
Yeah, cool series if you haven't seen it either.
I agree.
Other
Read Mr. Robot Rewind at GeekWire.
Corey's self-promotion.
Who, me? Self-promote? Never.
Other examples, I think the most prominent recent one was probably the Equifax breach.
Yeah.
145.5 million U.S. citizens affected by this.
Thank you, Equifax.
Yes.
You're the reason it took twice as long to get my new home loan. I had to unfreeze all the accounts because it's now my go-to for all credit.
And this particular attack, an attacker exploited a vulnerability in Apache Struts, so the framework they used for their website, which had been patched 2 years prior to the attack.
Mm.
Interesting trend of not updating stuff.
And yet... Our lovely BGP hackers expected people to have their updates in 2 weeks.
Exactly. And honestly, like you said, the sky is the limit in terms of other examples for this, because
yeah.
it is still the most prominent form of data breach. Next bucket would be malicious insider. So similar to outsider, except it's coming from inside.
You outed me, Mark?
This example is Corey. Many different things can fall under this too, like just a disgruntled employee trying to get back at them. Maybe they got fired and they're on their way out. They steal a thumb drive with a bunch of data.
I think anecdotally, I hear it's probably unfair that this department, but I hear the angry sales guy that takes all his clients with him is a common example.
Yep. Could be someone working with an external actor to try and gain access, like intentionally plugging in a thumb drive with malware. Could also be intentionally leaking, a topic that's been pretty big over the last few years, too.
I think you have a few real-world examples, but I'll throw one in because you mentioned someone, a malicious insider that's working with someone, Stuxnet. When the CIA allegedly was first getting a USB key that got the first air gap break into NETSC, is that how you pronounce it? Into the Iranian centrifuge facility. They had to get someone that worked there to kind of be a double agent and walk it in, from what the stories say.
Yeah. Another example, Edward Snowden was technically a malicious insider in that he took a bunch of sensitive information from his company, the NSA, and then leaked it out.
Technically. Maybe whistleblower is another way to put it.
I don't want to
sure
get...
Ricardo, you might hear from him in the future episode, would disagree.
I'm trying not to put a target on my back from people that don't like folks that call out Edward Snowden as
criminal. Don't worry, I'll take that target for you.
There we go.
To all hate mail and trolling to my Twitter alias, which is at XORRO _.
Boo. Another example that might be a little less touchy, there was a bank in India, Punjab National Bank, which is a state-run bank, I think one of the largest, if not the largest, where over a period of a few years, two employees were issuing unauthorized transactions on their SWIFT network.
Oh, wow.
Which we've talked about SWIFT a few times. It's the communication
was
network.
This was a different bank than the one that actually had the lack of firewall leak to
exactly.
The SWIFT?
So this was two employees had... They didn't have restrictions in place to prevent these two employees from basically granting unauthorized credit to a jeweler based out of India, who was then able to obtain credit overseas fraudulently from this. And long story short, he was able to get a couple billion bucks that he shouldn't have gotten because of these insiders that were granting his fraudulent transactions.
That one's new to me. Cool.
Yeah. Another bucket we can hit, state sponsored. This one's rather topical recently, right? And this could be, usually it's one nation attempting to disrupt the other. An example might be Russia allegedly attacking Ukraine to knock out their power systems. That would be a state-sponsored breach. Sometimes it could be monetary theft. We see this a lot, allegedly, with North Korea.
Yeah. By the way, that disappoints me. I mean, usually state-sponsored attacks, while I don't know how you can ever really defend and condone them, at least the ones that seem to go after different governments for espionage, you could at least say espionage is something, you know, nations do. But actually stealing money, you know, it makes sense why allegedly North Korea would do it with its sanctions. But that's one of the few examples where potentially a state is stealing money via cyber attacks.
And even outside just stealing money, the Lazarus Group, which has been tied to North Korea as a prominent hacking organization, they hacked Sony Pictures. Which,
can't let that movie come out.
In retaliation to that movie, The Interview, where the plot was to assassinate Kim Jong-un, they went and hacked Sony Pictures, stole a bunch of
emails.
But
they presented Kim Jong-un in such fantastic light.
It
I don't know why
like
they would.
Yeah,
very fun-loving.
Stole employee data, stole unreleased films, and then they threatened to release it all if Sony didn't take the film down, basically.
I think they got 1 terabyte of data. I think for weeks, employees couldn't come to work because their computers weren't up.
Yep.
By the way, another example that you and I use lately, especially when we're talking biometrics, is, and I think we might have talked about in a recent episode, OPM, Office of Personnel Management, where allegedly, that one, I think I might have said Russia in the past, but it was China, stole allegedly data from Office of Personnel Management in the U.S., which is kind of, think of it as HR for the U.S. government, including, you know, intelligence agents.
And the military.
Yeah, yeah. So lots and lots of sensitive information, including in some cases, fingerprints.
Now imagine if you're a secret agent and now your fingerprints are public knowledge.
Now, if you're a normal person, I keep on talking about how you can't change your fingerprint, but they must have some Mission Impossible. They just put their finger in some suitcase and it just puts new fingerprints on and they're all good.
That sounds painful.
We are the U.S. after all.
It's, the future is now.
Tom Cruise is probably doing a black op in some country we don't know about as we speak.
I like to think that Tom Cruise is actually a secret agent and all these films are just cover.
Tinfoil hat time, Scientology is a front for the U.S. government's intelligence service.
I'm not touching this one with a 10-foot pole.
Again, trolls at Zorro _.
Speaking of trolls, the next bucket is hacktivists. And really, hacktivism comes in a few different forms. It can be for a legitimate cause, and it could also just be for the lulls, as they call it.
Oh, God, I hated those guys.
An example for a cause was back in 2011, I think. Anonymous, who you've probably heard of, launched Operation Darknet, where they hacked into a web host for 40 different child pornography websites on the dark web.
Speaking of Scientology, too, by the way, I think Operation Scientology was one of the first, or Chanology was one of the first anonymous operations.
Yep. There's another group, Lulzsec, which you might...
That's the one I hate, by the way. I mean, not that I love Anonymous, but sometimes... Their means might seem okay, but Lulzsec is blech.
Lulzsec is all about, they claim is to expose poor security practices by actually exploiting them and then proving that it's wrong.
It's not what their pastebin said. It was for the giggles and the lulls.
Yes, that as well.
Sabu, Mr. Double Agent for the FBI.
And there's so many different examples, some of them for just the lulls. I don't know really if I'd call a DDoS attack a breach, but it's still at least an attack.
I would say you probably wouldn't see a DDoS on the breach level index simply because those are mainly looking at public data breaches that have to be disclosed. It's definitely a type of attack, though.
But if we're talking about hacktivists, I have to talk about how angry I was a few Christmases ago when I wanted to play Xbox Live.
Yeah. If you ever want to know how to make Mark mad, steal Equifax information, who cares, but stop him from online gaming during Christmas, you better watch out. That's when suddenly he might change his tune about hackback.
Exactly. And it took our Lord and Savior, Kim.com, to give them 3,000 free passes to his mega upload site in order to restore Xbox Live back. That whole thing was just
comical. And I wonder what malicious DDoSers would use Manga for.
Yeah, there's no way that they pirate software in movies.
Yeah, or put it on their malware and stuff like that. It's a totally legit service.
Exactly.
Sorry, by the way, I do occasionally use it for sharing files. It actually can be used quite legitimately.
Corey's trying to get those free keys as well for himself. It's great. Please. It just costs too much money. The final bucket, though, is a catch-all, unknown. Because there are so many data breaches day after day that we often don't know like where the data is coming from that we find.
Or where, yeah.
It was just a few weeks ago.
Or how
ago.
The breach happened, I think, is the other thing, right? By the way, these are the ones that you and I are responsible because we're just so sophisticated. We cover our tracks this well, they never figure it out. Oh, wait a second. I just screwed up. We can wipe this part, right?
So speaking of that massive username and password breach that we just talked about on a previous podcast episode, how very topical, Corey.
By the way, just kidding. If there's any serious folks out there, I know security's not a joking matter. Just trying to make it fun.
I think that is a good example, though. I think it was our news section in the last episode where we talked about that new username password breach. Where,
773 collection one.
Yeah, it was basically just a giant dump of data, credentials that, I mean, there were hints as to which websites it came from, but there's no knowing exactly
how they got them. We don't know for sure how they got them. I bet you if someone went through and picked the domains they come from, there might be data about those individual attacks. So some of them might be known, some of them might be unknown, but how they were all aggregated, I'm sure there's many domains in that list that have not been explained by a specific attack yet.
And there could also be smaller companies that might not have resources to investigate how the breach happens. Maybe they just have to get back online, or they shutter their doors because of the breach and we just never know how it occurred.
Yep. Or God forbid some company that hasn't disclosed it to their customers because they don't even know they've been breached until now.
Exactly. The good news is, though, if at least on our end where we're trying to research these breaches, is that there are laws in place now that require mandatory disclosure periods, which means we get to know more and more often how these breaches occur.
And by the way, it used to be only in the U.S. with kind of our state laws. We don't have a federal one, mm-hmm. from what I understand yet, but almost every single state has one. But now we should start seeing data from Europe or, the EU, because of GDPR. I wasn't sure if I could say EMEA, but I don't think Africa and the Middle East fall under the EU's GDPR.
Not yet. But, I mean, while it may seem like a nuisance as a company to have to report that, A, you've been the victim of a breach and then like some details on how it happened, it really does help other organizations protect against similar things.
And frankly, the reason isn't only for you to report. It's not for you to report the breaches, to protect your customers.
Yes.
I mean, the time you really have to report is if you've lost somebody else's data, because they have the right to know that so they can take the actions to protect themselves from identity theft or whatever else.
That said, I'm going to put my jaded hat on and say, at this point, all of my personal data is available on the internet.
I agree with you. I've definitely said that before. Even my social security addresses, I think I showed you too. I always forget the site name. I have it in a bookmark, but it's pretty easy to find a list of people's addresses. You know, there's a reason people can, what do they call it? When they get swatting you, there's a reason people can swat others so easily.
Yeah. So, I mean, hopefully these new breach disclosure laws help incentivize companies to put a little more effort into securing themselves from breaches, but I don't think they're ever going to go away entirely. There's just too many endpoints out there on the internet, too many companies that might not follow along exactly letter to the law in terms of compliance with these things. So your personal data is always going to be up for grabs.
Yep.
Any other takeaways? Maybe we can leave on a happy note on this one.
I mean, the happy note is, you know, I like that we have this breach level. And I like that we're looking at data breaches, seeing how they're happening, spreading awareness. And, you know, there are protections from most of these attacks, you know, just do basic security blocking and tackling. Or as chatting with someone, at least do good enough security that you're better than your neighbor. You know, the classic, if you're with a friend and you run faster, the bear gets him. Just do a little better than average security at least, and maybe they'll go after the other guy instead.
Remind me never to go hiking with Corey.
I run fast.
Yeah, but I'm small. I could probably outpace you.
I don't know. Long legs.
Next week, Mark and Corey race.
Depends if it's short spurts or long. I'm sure, by the way, if I have to run for 2 hours, you would kill me. You and your soccer games.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll have to test that sometime. Thanks again for listening. As always, if you enjoyed this episode and its rare incoherency, please feel free to subscribe.
You're welcome, guys.
If you have any questions on this episode or suggestions for future topics, you can reach out to us on Twitter. I'm at @XORRO_ and Corey is at @SecAdept.
And by the way, no, the request for Mark to talk about his favorite boy band, he just doesn't want to do it on air. Sorry, guys.
I don't think Backstreet Boys is together anymore, are they?
Aw, I think they're doing a reunion tour, right?
Hooray! Thanks again for listening, guys, and we will see you next week.